Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing Squid Game Money Lessons.
That's right, we are going to talk about Squid Game during this episode, throughout this entire episode. But the first thing that we want to make sure that you know is that we will not give any spoilers throughout this episode. I personally have only watched the first three episodes, and so I actually, personally, I am unable to reveal any spoilers. Joel, on the other hand, is who I'm going to have to keep an eye on during this episode.
So not only would I have tens of thousands of people virtually angry with me, but I would also have one person who's in the room with me very angry.
Yes.
So we will avoid any of those spoilers while we're trying to our best to kind of say, hey, there's a whole lot of money lessons to be gleaned from the show.
But just a warning, I do want to say that we are going to talk about the show. And so if you don't want to know about what the show is about at all, then you know, maybe it is worth it for you to hit pause, save this one for later, maybe until you've watched any of the episodes, or maybe you're halfway through and you want to finish it.
Come back after episode one at least then.
Sure.
We'll have to cover at least some of that.
We're talking through mostly episode one, to be honest. But really, we're not giving much more away than what you had seen in like the trailer for the show, things like that. Oh, and also I wanted to mention that you do not have to be a Squid Game fan in order to listen to this episode and learn something valuable from it when it comes to your personal finance. It certainly helps because some of the illustrations we're going to give are connected to the show. But if you're one of the few folks who haven't yet seen anything about Squid Game, we just wanted you to know that it is not a prerequisite.
That being said, I've watched the whole thing and I think it's a great show. And I recommend it if you're okay with violence.
It does. That is true.
Yeah, copious like amounts of violence.
Quentin Tarantino style violence. Because it's not like overly...
Which I will say, I sometimes get a little squeamish at. To me, I still really enjoy the show. I'm not super into violent movies or television shows, but this one I thought was still worth watching.
Yeah, we don't enjoy it for the gore, but it is a big part of the show. But aside from that, the show is so good.
I'm sure you're ready to watch the next six episodes.
I really am. I'm so ready to dive into episode four.
All right. Well, before we get to the topic at hand, let's talk, Matt, real quickly. I wanted to mention, I recently had to figure out what I was going to do with health insurance because as everybody knows, I think most How to Money listeners know, I left my day job earlier this year and because of just really good luck and fortune, I was on my previous employer's healthcare through COBRA, and then the federal government made those COBRA healthcare plans free for a few months, which I was like, oh my gosh, that was just, you know, money falling out of the sky there that I did not expect. But now that is over, that's done with. And so I had to kind of take a look around and I looked at healthcare.gov trying to see, okay, what would a healthcare plan here cost my family? It turns out not a whole lot of money. I mean, well, it depends on how you define a whole lot of money. It was a lot of money, but it wasn't as bad as maybe I thought it might have been.
Sure.
But yeah, you know, I know you had a great experience with MediShare. You even wrote an article about it on our website years ago, which you recently updated.
A health sharing plan.
Yeah. And so I looked into MediShare too, and it turns out that's where my family and I went. We decided that that was the best rate with the best coverage. And it's important to note that these health sharing ministries, these health sharing companies, some of which are completely Christian based, some are based around other religions, some are very loosely or not at all based around anything to do with faith. But MediShare for us seemed like it had just the best, the lowest premium amount with kind of the best history and coverage options. So that's where we went. And now we've joined you and your family on that MediShare bandwagon.
That's right. Paying something like $250 a month, which is incredibly affordable for a family our size. And honestly, too, just at the ages that Kate and I are at, that you and Emily are at, it's just an incredibly affordable way to make sure that we are covered when it comes to our healthcare. But again, and I've wrote about this, but there are a few things about health sharing that not everybody is going to be on board with. You kind of have to weigh those pros and the cons and decide what's best for you. But we'll make sure to link to that article within our show notes.
Yeah. And some, like I said, they all have like different requirements. And it's worth looking into the different different health sharing companies to see which one might fit best for your fam. But we'll link to an article that explains the way a few different ones work that I think is a really helpful explainer. And then we'll also link to Matt's article about MediShare in the show notes. But just want to let people know that's where I'm at now. And for our family, it's definitely going to be a big money saver. On the other side of the boat, though, Matt, we do have to have more money set aside in our savings.
Yes,
because
you do.
Yeah, we're basically covering full freight all of our healthcare costs up until the first $12,000 a year, which is a lot.
That's what we're on. I mean, that's how you save the most money.
Yeah, self-insuring to a large
every
extent.
Every single month, exactly. All right, let's go ahead and mention the beer that you and I are enjoying on this episode. You picked these up, and I'm actually surprised, and we'll talk about why at the end of the episode when we share our thoughts on these beers, but we are enjoying Alpha Abstraction, which is a double IPA by Wild Leap Craft Beer. But enough of that for now. Let's go ahead and get to the episode.
Let's do it. Let's start talking about Squid Game and the money lessons that you can learn from watching that show. And I was surprised because I've been hearing the buzz about this show. And I was like, well, I totally want to check it out. I love dystopian style content. And yeah, it turns out this has really been a breakout show for Netflix. They recently announced that Squid Game is worth more than $900 million to their company, which I thought was really impressive.
Insane.
And apparently, this series actually, it costs Netflix less than one Dave Chappelle stand-up special.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I find that hard to believe. That's
like,
crazy.
They paid Dave like $24 million, and they paid to get Squid Game was like $21 million.
So, oh my gosh!
Obviously, they have gotten their investment back and more at this point in time.
Wow.
2/3 of all Netflix subscribers have actually watched Squid Game at this point too. And so, yeah, while Netflix doesn't release all of the streaming details for shows and movies that they create or partner with, it gives you a sense of just how big, how gargantuan this show has been around the world since it was released in mid-September. And like I said, I personally really love the show, love dystopian stuff, but we're going to try and extrapolate some lessons that were just easily discernible. I remember thinking this, Matt, in episode one, like, oh my gosh, I feel like we have to talk about Squid Game on the show now. There's just so much stuff in here that relates to personal finance. Again, we're going to try to not dive too deep into the plot lines if you haven't seen it yet. But if you're a money nerd and you're paying close attention while watching the show, you'll notice that there were some really impactful money lessons that are worth discussing. That's what Matt and I are going to do today.
Exactly. And again, most of the lessons we are going to discuss are mostly from episode one. So rest assured that we're not going to spoil the entire series for you. But who knew that you'd be able to learn all the things that you should and shouldn't do from watching a Korean drama. Well, specifically, actually, the things that you shouldn't be doing with your money. But as we are recording this right now, Squid Game was the number one show in 94 different countries. It's been, yeah, like Joel, like you said, it's been Netflix's biggest hit ever by a long shot. But even still, we felt like it was lacking a little bit. Let's be honest. You know, the only thing missing from Squid Game is two nerdy money dudes digging deep to get money lessons out of it.
I'm sure Netflix is reaching out to us as we speak.
Oh, yeah. We're about to ink our own deal. And who knows? This might be something that we do on a regular basis. It kind of depends on, you know, what the next streaming hit is. But it also depends, too, on how much is money a part of the plot line. But for Squid Game in particular, we felt that there are just too many money red flags just popping up while we were watching this to not create an episode about it. So let's go ahead and dive in.
Let's do it. Okay, so the first money lesson occurs really within the first few seconds of the first episode,
like,
right?
Immediately,
and,
yes.
And it stuck out in my mind like so many of these do. And it's the maxim, spend money while you've got it. This mentality is pervasive in Squid Game, but specifically with the main character, Song Gi-hun. And I apologize in advance for pronunciation issues.
I think that's correct,
okay,
actually.
Right.
Oh, by the way, when you watched it, we never talked about this. Did you watch it with English subtitles, or did you watch the English version?
Oh, no, English subtitles, for sure.
Okay, yeah. Got it. I heard that, actually, make sure you have it on English subtitles and not the closed caption English, which is evidently a very poor translation.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. I actually love foreign films, and so I'm used to watching things with subtitles. My wife is like, nah, I'm not gonna do that. And so I watched Squid Game alone.
I would even turn subtitles on with Ted Lasso sometimes. because
let's be honest, that Midwestern accent was hard to understand.
Obviously.
At times.
Obviously, Roy Kent's accent. But there were times when I literally couldn't figure out what he was saying.
Some of the blokes in the bar, I had no idea what they were saying.
That's true.
But yeah, in like we said, the main character, Song Gi-hun, in fact, he actually literally says something along these lines, that spend money while you've got it, during the first scene of the show.
Yeah.
Basically, he says, what's the point of saving money when he's never able to get ahead? And so instead of that, let's just enjoy the money now. Live life to the fullest while you have that money, that short-lived period of time. And of course, this is a huge character flaw with the main character that you're presented with at the very outset of the show. But this is also just a massive problem when it comes to how so many people handle their finances today. There's this YOLO, you only live once element when it comes to that money approach. And it's bound to, as it does in this show, lead to some really awful consequences in the end.
Yeah, it certainly aligns with the line that we all know from the philosopher Dave Matthews, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Did you ever listen to Dave
back in
the day? I totally was into him.
Were you? Okay.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I love, though, that this was the first lesson that we get introduced to in the show, because it's often the first challenge that we encounter as individuals when we're faced with an issue with like limited resources or limited money, right? Like I remember specifically as a kid, my grandma buying my cousin and I both a pack of gum at the grocery store. Like we each got to pick out which flavor we wanted. And no joke, I'm pretty sure that I chewed through my entire pack that afternoon while my cousin Adam had his for the rest of the weekend. And so, like, I bring that up because we can all think back to purchases maybe that we made as kids or maybe while we were in college, even as adults, to be honest, that we regret, right? In the moment, it seemed like it was the right choice for us to make. But when we're driven by our immediate appetites and we don't give much or any thought at all to the consequences, we're bound to be disappointed.
Okay, I always point back to my Sega Dreamcast purchase. And it was a fine system. I bought it used from a friend and I was like, sweet, I'm getting a deal. Getting all the games at once because buying each game was too expensive. I couldn't afford it.
You that package deal.
I got the package deal, but what I really wanted and what I really should have done was saved up for the newer gaming system that all my other friends were playing, and I cheaped out. And that is, I will say, a consistent character flaw with me that I've been working to remedy for a long time.
Thus, frugal or cheap.
Right, exactly.
There you go.
But yeah, another aspect of the first scene is the fact that there is an unhealthy parent-child relationship. And this we see starkly at the very beginning. And it definitely plays out poorly, not just in how the son and the mom interact, but when it comes to how they talk about money. It's obvious, again, that the main character, Song, he lives with his mom and he depends on her for a roof over his head, for money, and for food. But at the same time, he's a very grown man. And his over-reliance on his mom to bring home the bacon on his behalf has actually created some real animosity between the two of them. And so, needless to say, it's easy for poor money habits to create unhealthy ways of interacting with the people that you're closest to. We see this clearly in the first few minutes of this show. And it's one of those things that, for our listeners, we want to make sure you're aware of, because it's really easy to let unhealthy money habits actually hurt the relationships of the people that you're closest to.
Yeah, and actually, we just read Wes Moss's book in preparation for his interview next week on money and happiness, so you can actually keep an eye out for that episode coming up on Monday. But in his research, he found that the happiest retirees live near their kids, not with them. And so if you live near your adult kids, you're likely going to be 5 times happier as a retiree. And he found sharp declines in happiness during situations where the kids actually had to move back home and were at least somewhat dependent on their parents. And then, you know, just like we talked with Liz Frazier last week, it's so incredibly important to work towards raising children who are financially savvy and, you know, can set out on their own. We're just not going to be doing anyone any favors by coddling our kids. And as children ourselves, we need to make sure that we're being self-sufficient too and not being over-reliant on our parents. Not only does that keep us from our full potential, but it's going to decrease their abilities to get ahead and be happy as well.
Yes, Matt. But this is really just kind of the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the money lessons that we can glean from the hit show, the wonderful show that is Squid Game. And we have a lot more thoughts that we want to share. We'll get to those right after this break.
All right. Alrighty, we're back from the break. We're talking about the different money lessons that we can learn from Squid Game. And Joel, you mentioned that this wasn't a show that you could get Emily on board with. Somehow, I was able to rope Kate in because she was there right when it flipped on. And the first scene was them eating, and there's Korean food. And obviously, I don't know if it's obvious. I'm half Korean, and we eat a decent amount of Korean food here in our house. And so Kate was like, oh, there's kimchi, there's rice. And I'm like, yeah.
And that's what hooked her in.
Well, that's what allowed her to give it a chance. And of course, it's not her favorite, but we have been able to watch it together. But so Joel, like right before the break, we were talking about the unhealthy relationships there between a character and his mom. Well, you know, we're talking about Song specifically. One of the things that Song does to cement the fact that things are broken between him and his mom, he steals money from her, which is, first of all, that's bad enough, you know, on its own. But then he uses that money to satisfy his gambling fix.
Yeah, just to show exactly how rough that relationship has gotten.
Oh, my gosh.
When you're stealing money from your parents, that there's a lot of damage done right
yes,
there.
Yes, yeah. And so that's going to be our next money lesson that we can learn from Squid Game. And that is that gambling, well, at least doing so regularly, isn't good. We actually talked about this recently because we're seeing a huge rise in online sports gambling. It seems fun and innocent to maybe drop $20 on your favorite team or a specific player or even a play. Can't you even bet on specific plays now?
I think it has gotten to that point.
But the instant access to the gambling apps on our phones makes it even more engaging than ever. And the downsides, we believe, can be pretty severe. It's best to stay away altogether, in particular if you have a hard time setting boundaries and it's not something that you struggled with in the past.
Yeah. Matt and I, we're not teetotalers by any stretch.
No.
I mean, we especially when it comes to alcohol, we still believe, even though we drink a beer on every episode, that you should do it in extreme moderation.
Sure.
Because five beers is a whole lot different than one or two beers, right? It affects you differently.
And the same thing is true with gambling.
Exactly. What you said about gambling on the reg, that's what we're specifically taking issue with here. It's the fact that it appears that the main character, Song, he doesn't really have a job. He depends on gambling to try and help support his mom and himself. He's hoping that the next big win is going to come along any second.
He's just waiting for his big break.
Yeah. And it's like, well, I know it's going to come at some point. I know that the second horse in the third race is going to actually pull through like I thought they would. And it turns out that is usually, almost always, an illusion. And yeah, there's actually reference to a job that he has, but you actually never see him in the show working.
It doesn't seem like it's a part of his character.
Right.
He's not, you know, like just grinding it out, working hard for a paycheck. That's just not a part of who he is. He's just always looking for that quick fix.
The easy big score.
Yeah.
And so yeah, he's looking for the quick shortcut, and
yeah,
he'd rather chance it, mm-hmm, then instead of putting the effort in to earn a respectable living wage and showing up to work on time. And so, yeah, even when the time comes for him to buy someone a gift later in an episode, instead of going to the store and buying something like a normal human being, he ends up risking all of the money that he has in chance of winning this bigger gift. So it just kind of shows how gambling has taken him over as a human being, really.
Yeah, you know, and interestingly, there's a point in that first episode, too, where Song, he's playing this game, and he's basically being trained to want to take on even more risk in the future. He gets a small taste of a prize so that he's willing to risk even more down the road. And even though that pertains most directly to our gambling lesson here, there seems to be a valuable takeaway when it comes to the small ways, the different subtle ways that, or actually not so subtle ways, that companies are able to kind of get their hooks in us so that we become even more beholden to either the products or the services that they sell. Like it makes me think of like the free samples at Costco, right? Like you're walking along, you feel like you're pulling one over on them because you're just like, oh, I'm just hopping from station to station. And they're standing there. They're like, oh, you like the taste of those corn chips and that salsa? There's plenty more where that came from. Before you know it, you're walking out with like a pallet full of chips.
I know. Yeah, you're like, little do you know, I just got a free lunch. And they're like, no. Little do you know, you just bought three bags of chips.
Yeah, little do you know, you're never going to end your Costco membership, and that is how they make the bulk of their money.
Yeah, it's funny, Matt, like this specific instance that you're referring to that happens in episode one, it's one of those things that it didn't really register in the same way with me as it did with you. But when you pointed it out, I was like, oh yeah, that's brilliant. He is being trained.
He's being groomed.
In a small way.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's happening. When you're scrolling Instagram, even the first time you see an ad for a company, you might be like, okay, cool, whatever. But the fifth, sixth time, 12th time, you're like, what's going on here? And you just, at some point, you respond to that stimulus. And so
yeah,
I think it's really important for us to guard the things that are entering our smartphones, to guard the things that are entering our brain, because in so many ways, I feel like advertisers are trying to groom us for that big purchase too.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, this is what they do, right? Advertisers and marketers, they're professionals at getting us to buy their things. I mean, it even makes me think of something as innocuous as 2-day free shipping. When that first came on the scene, it was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Like, free shipping and I get it in 2 days. And now as we've seen that, get, you know, that window of time, that something, well, it kind of depends now with like the shipping delays and whatnot, but we get used to certain standards and we have this, we almost make this unconscious decision that we can't live without this thing anymore.
Yeah.
And then we are willing to go through great lengths and pay high prices in order to maintain that certain level of living. And so, yeah, we felt that that most directly tied to the gambling lesson and how he was being groomed to continue to gamble. But we certainly feel like you need to keep that in mind when it comes to what it is you purchase and our own consumption habits.
So there's this new startup in New York City, Matt, that is doing grocery delivery. And you might have thought that like Instacart was doing a great job and they had it down pat, although I don't really use the grocery delivery services. But this company apparently is trying to do it in 15 minutes or less. I think they're called
Holy cow.
Joker. And apparently, at least in Manhattan, they're being mostly successful right now. So it's one of those things where you're right, like the window just keeps closing. What we want just continues to increase exponentially. And at some point, you got to cut it off. Yeah. It's, you know, what's next? 4-minute grocery delivery? I mean, yeah, good luck. And but yeah, another lesson really that we learned from watching Squid Game was that it's important to be generous even when you don't have much money. And there's this like interesting little tidbit where a character gives away some money to somebody else. And then later, he asks for that money back.
Yeah, shortly thereafter.
Yeah. He goes racing back and he's like, wait a second, I gave you money and actually I didn't, I couldn't do that. I need it back. And it's not that he didn't want to be generous. It seems like he did, but in this specific situation, something unexpected happened, and then he was like left in an awkward scenario where he needed that cash. And so, yeah, the main takeaway here is that you don't have to be rich in order to be generous. You can, and you really should start putting money where your priorities are right now in terms of how you give some of it away. Sometimes the most generous people are the ones who have the least amount of money to give. I've experienced that, Matt, time and time again, that sometimes the people with the most money are the stingiest and they don't give away a huge proportion of their income. And sometimes people with very little to give are willing to give you anything they have. And so, yeah, what we would say is be generous. Don't go into debt being generous, but don't neglect philanthropy altogether until you reach financial independence. I think that can be a tendency sometimes of people who are hyper money conscious. There's something just massively important about giving money away now. And it doesn't just benefit others, but it puts money in its proper place in your life too. I think that's one of the biggest check marks in the box of deciding to give at least a portion of the money that you make away to other people and other organizations that you care about.
Sure, yeah. And you know, there's a massive difference too between feeling like that you're wealthy or that you're rich and actually being wealthy or rich, right? And in that moment, this character, he felt like he was wealthy. And so he gave out of the, you know, the abundance of that emotional high. But as we know, oftentimes our emotions can be deceptive and we might be making a decision based on something that isn't completely grounded in reality. I'm going to say all this too, because at the same time, I feel like this is tricky because there are times when you have to trust you got to trust your gut, right? Like all things being equal and you have to choose between two options, which one are you going to go with? Those are times when someone would say, well, you got to kind of go with your gut, right? But especially when it comes to being generous, I think there are very few of us who have the problem of giving too much of our money away.
Right, yeah. It's like, hey, I don't have enough money in savings because I was just so freaking generous last month.
Never heard anybody say that, ever. Right, I mean, literally ever in my life. And so that's why just creating a plan to give away, just say a percentage of your income, is what we would recommend. Because guess what? It scales with your income and it removes the temptation to want to cling on to just all that is yours, right? And so I love the idea of being able to predetermine something ahead of time when you don't necessarily have your emotions maybe perhaps clouding your judgment and then basing your actions in the future based on what you've previously decided. It's kind of like a budget.
Yeah, a lot of people give in the moment because they're prodded to give and they're like, they either say, well, wait, I didn't actually have the money to do that. Or they say, well, that wasn't actually the cause I wanted to support. And we agree, like taking a step back, deciding how much you're going to give ahead of time, and then funneling that money in those directions, not just deciding in the moment, is the best way to go. And it's okay to give spontaneously, but you want to make sure you budgeted for that too.
Yes.
And so, all right, another money lesson that we learned watching Squid Game was that a lack of money doesn't equate to moral failure. And our society, Matt, as a whole, we glorify money. We love to talk about the richest people in the world. There's a list.
Bezos is in the headlines a lot.
Yeah, Bezos, Elon Musk, and it's like, well, who's the kingpin now? And I get tired of seeing those headlines. We as a society, we're pushed the glitz, the glamour, the celebrity, and money is a huge part of that. We either make the most successful among us into heroes or villains, like Amazon on its way up. It's like, look at this company. It's the big upstart. It's going to knock off Walmart. How cool is this? It's super techie, and it's going to make all of our lives easier. And now it's like, world's richest man going into space. He's the worst.
And Matt and Joel over there bashing Prime Delivery.
Right. But like, really, when it comes down to it, I don't want to glorify or demonize Jeff Bezos. But having money, what we have to realize is that it doesn't make you a better or worse human being. There are certainly many characters in the show with severe moral flaws, but there are also some incredibly kind and generous characters in the show who ended up in dire financial circumstances that had nothing to do with making poor choices. And so, yeah, what we would say is that poverty, it's not a moral failure. It truly is just a lack of money. In our society, that's not always the message that we get, but it's something that we think is incredibly true, and it's worth mentioning.
And actually, there is this recent paper on poverty from the National Bureau of Economic Research, and it showed that access to better jobs for folks who are living in impoverished conditions, that largely reduces poverty. And so it's important to note that there are problems on a societal level that need to be addressed. And it's important for us to ask ourselves, what kind of society do we want to live in? There's no need to demonize anyone in particular in order to create meaningful fixes. But at the same time, when someone like Warren Buffett talks about paying a smaller percentage of tax than his secretary, I feel like it's worth considering how it is our tax system functions and if it's doing what we want it to. It's worth reconsidering how it is our government is currently functioning and if it's doing a good job playing the roles that we want it to. When you zoom out, there's a lot on the societal level that we should re-examine as well.
Yeah, Matt, I think if you were to take a poll, people on both sides of the aisle would say the current tax system, the current way things are set up, not ideal.
Sure. Yeah.
You wouldn't have a lack of people that have problems with the current construction of things. But one of the most important elements of the show Squid Game is debt. There's a whole lot of commentary. There's a whole lot that we can glean and talk about based on the role that debt plays in the show. And so, we've got stuff that we want to talk about on that front and more right after this.
We're back for the break. We're talking about Squid Game, and anybody who's already seen even a single episode of Squid Game probably can't believe that we haven't talked about debt yet, because it is so fundamental and so crucial and so at the center of how the storyline even exists. So let's get to that overarching lesson that we can all learn from Squid Game, which is that debt can ruin your life. This message comes across loud and clear. And the whole reason that folks have entered this dystopian world is because of the money trouble that they're in. And anyone who has ever been in copious amounts of debt in their own life knows that at a certain point, that debt begins to cloud almost every interaction, every choice that you make. It's proven that debt even makes you dumber as well. The stats show that an influx of debt can drop your IQ by about 12 points. Owing credit card companies, owing student loans, a car payment, not having enough money to cover just even all those monthly bills, that just becomes as much of a mental problem as it is a money one. Those stresses weigh on us. And so it's not going to guarantee that you'll necessarily go down the Squid Game path, but it's sure going to mess with your brain, and that's something that you want to make sure that you avoid.
Fortunately, this is fictional, and you're right. I hope nobody ever goes down the actual Squid Game path. But yeah, you're right, Matt. Like, debt is an enormous burden for tens of millions of Americans, and living under that weight, it can be brutal over time. And so, one of the other things that it made me think was that where you go to get debt matters.
Yep.
We've talked in the past about the difference between good debt and bad debt, how getting a mortgage to buy a home or taking out a small amount of student loans, both of those are okay in our book. You don't want to take on hundreds of thousands of dollars to get a philosophy degree from your state university. But yeah, in the show, Song, the main character in Squid Game, he actually gets money from loan sharks in order to fuel that gambling addiction that we spoke about earlier. He's hoping to strike it rich, right, in order to pay that loan off. And then he's like, you know what? I'll probably win enough to provide for my family at the same time. I'll just do it this once. It's going to be all good. I doubt that any How to Money listeners are visiting loan sharks, but you know, where you
hopefully not.
Yeah. But like, really, when it comes down to it, where you go to take on debt matters in a big way, because the modern day loan sharks are actually payday lenders. They're title loan companies, which you see commercials for. They charge exorbitant rates of interest. The rent to own places, they're just as bad, saying like, come in here, get this TV for this many payments over this many years, and it turns out you pay three or four times as much for a television as you would if you were to go buy it cash at a local electronics store. And these companies prey on people who are in need. They often create much greater levels of financial distress in the end, and there are so many better paths to go down, including seeking help from local religious organizations or nonprofits where you live, patient advocates if medical debt is the problem that you're facing, or borrowing money from your local credit union. It's just important to note that where you go to get your debt matters a whole lot. And even though we don't think you're going to go to the worst possible place, there's still a sliding scale of good versus bad places to go when you are taking on debt, even for a good reason.
Sure. I mean, honestly, even like going with a credit card is going to be better than going to like a payday loan. And that's not something we would ever tell you to do. Like, we're never going to say, hey, get a credit card and pay interest on that. We don't ever want you to do that. But compared to the rates that payday lenders are charging, I mean, the average interest rate is 391%. We need to annualize that and compare it to an actual credit card. And so even though those lenders aren't like physically beating you up in order to get their money back, it does feel criminal that they're able to charge that much money compared to some of the other options that are out there. And so another lesson we wanted to share from Squid Game is that debt doesn't discriminate based on your income. And okay, so let's talk. We've been talking a lot about Song, the main character. There's this other main character who works in investment banking. He's made a ton of money for years, and given his occupation, you would think that he would be well acquainted to maybe the surefire ways to grow his wealth over the years. But instead, he got into risky investment vehicles. He lost a lot of his money, and he went into debt because he invested unwisely. Let's just say he definitely wasn't going the low-cost index fund route.
he hadn't heard of Jack Bogle, I guess.
No, doesn't. Well, like, he does exist in Korea, but you know, not in this dystopian world. But there are some methods of investing that are much more like gambling than folks want to admit. And just because you're putting money in the stock market, that doesn't make you an investor per se, because methods of speculation like day trading, options trading, even trading in foreign currency, these are all incredibly risky. So just because you've got a great income, just because you make a lot of money, this doesn't mean that you can't fall prey to poor money choices as well.
Yeah, Matt. And one of the things we've seen more and more statistics of people who are earning $100,000 or more claiming that they're living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
And in fact, a recent survey found that 60% of millennials who make more than $100,000 a year say that they wouldn't be able to pay rent next month if they lost their job tomorrow. Like, that's how dire their actual financial position is despite their income. And yet 40% of Americans who make more than $100,000 say that they similarly are living on the financial precipice. And so a high income definitely does not ensure good decision making or that you'll be able to easily avoid money problems. I think that's the misnomer sometimes. It's like, well, if I make enough money, then financial problems go out the window. Not true. You still have to figure out and stick to the core tenets of personal finance. No matter how big your paycheck gets, you can make insane amounts of money and still not have any savings to back you up if that stops on a dime. And just look at the stats, Matt, when it comes to former NFL players. A massive percentage of these guys, 78% of them, to be specific, end up in severe financial trouble, or they end up filing for bankruptcy within 2 years of their playing career being over. That is almost unfathomable for any of us to comprehend when, let's say, even if you only played in the league for 2 or 3 years, but you ended up making $1 million or $2 million a year, it's like, that's more money than some people will see in their entire lives, and you made it in a really short period of time.
And it's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Completely. And so spending less than you make, prioritizing savings, it requires discipline and the ability to say no to things that you want. Uninhibited spending and amassing debt, they don't just stop because your income grows. That's definitely one of the lessons that you can learn from Squid Game and from, NFL players in general, or retired NFL players at least.
Yeah, and you know, lifestyle creep, that's also a big reason for these increased claims of not having enough money, even when you're making big bucks. And we actually talked about this in depth back in episode 374, lifestyle creep, and just how it's like it lurks in the back of our minds and we find it working its way into our spending habits. And this is also something that doesn't discriminate between those who earn, average or below average incomes versus those who earn a ton of money. This is a real issue for people on all income levels. And when you look at the stats of how everything has grown in our society, it's clear that we've all become accustomed to just bigger and better, more square footage, bigger vehicles. Give me the 108-ounce drink. Sure. Hit me with all that sugar.
And the 140-inch TV, too, while you're at it.
And all that to say, progress. Like it's not all bad that things are getting better. I think there's an argument to be made that things going bigger might be a bad thing. But the margin of progress is mostly a good thing, but it also becomes much easier to inflate our lifestyle just in a whole slew of ways. And ultimately, it's up to us to keep our expectations in check, maybe even lowering them sometimes if you realize that your spending is not sustainable, right? If your income is not going to be able to keep up with your spending, that's something that you're going to have to actively, change on your own. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself in debt. You need to work to stop moving those goalposts as to what it is that's going to make you happy.
Yeah, and the whole point of this show, Matt, is we really want to point people in the direction of choosing a few areas in their life where they consciously spend more money and then cutting back in almost every other area of their life so that they can enjoy the things that they love the most, put their money in the places where it's going to have the greatest ROI. Craft beer is the example for us. There are a couple other specific areas of each of our lives where we have chosen to spend more money in the here and now while we're saving and investing well for the future. And we think that that is a good way for you to move forward when it comes to your money. You don't have to put your budget on complete lockdown and enjoy nothing of value. That would be deprivation at its finest. And there are way too many people in the personal finance world preaching that. We completely disagree with that mindset, but you can't have it all either. And so, keeping lifestyle creep in check is a really, really important thing for us all to do. And all right, Matt, let's get to the last great lesson that we learned watching Squid Game that applies to our money. And it's that there's really no quick way out of the bind that we put ourselves in. In the beginning, it looks like just playing a simple game could lead to maybe the solving of all the money problems that the main character faces. It's nice to think that there's a way to quickly remedy a problem that might have taken you 5, 10, 15 years to get yourself into. Massive levels of debt obviously don't spring up overnight. It's almost always a prolonged habit of buying things that you can't afford slowly and steadily. It is that lifestyle creep factor, really, that rears its ugly head and slowly but surely gets you into a debt problem that you can't quickly get your way out of. And in the same way that you found yourself in credit card debt one purchase at a time over many years, well, the path out of that debt is similarly slow. And so, playing the lottery really only makes things worse. It's like, oh, cool, I need money to pay off this debt. Why don't I just take all the extra cash I've got on hand and see if I can win the big one? Well, that is the exact wrong approach. It's crucial to make a plan to get out of that debt hole and then to stick to it. And so, it's just important to note that there's no quick solution. There's no easy fix. It takes time, intentionality, and creating an actual plan to help get you to the final goal you want to reach.
Yeah, and honestly, if there is an easy button that's available to you, it's probably worth being reminded of the fact that it's probably too good to be true, right? It's most likely going to overpromise and underdeliver, and that's something that's important for us to keep in mind. And so, like you said, it's really important for us to remember, too, that money isn't going to solve all of our problems. Even if all of your debts were, say, going to be paid off tomorrow, you're still going to have real issues in your life, right? If you're currently in debt, it's easy to think that more money is going to be the solution. Like, we specifically saw that with Song in the, you know, back in their first episode. He gets a lot of money, but since he didn't address his underlying issues of gambling, he continued down that same path, and he persisted in making poor life decisions. And even if you're working really hard to legitimately earn your income, if you have spending issues, you know, at your core, more money won't solve your problems. And so this is just a final reminder that money can't and it won't fix everything in your life. And it's crucial to have limits when it comes to what you're willing to do for money as well. You know, specifically saying no to money, that is a superpower worth developing. We need to make sure that we're not just jumping at every possible chance there is to make more money. We kind of talked about this somewhat recently when we talked about just different gig jobs out there and how if you start to enter that world, you see all these different things that you could potentially do. And it's, you know, we kind of likened it to a buffet of options to you. And you're like, oh my gosh, look at all the different things that I could do to make an extra buck. Yeah. But what do you want your life to look like? Make sure that you're focusing on the things that truly matter and the things that aren't necessarily going to give you an immediate fix, but instead to focus on the more long-term solutions that's going to bring about, in this case, the most financial health for you.
Okay, so there it is. I'm sure other listeners who paid really close attention might have found other great takeaways when it comes to our money from watching Squid Game, but these were ours. And so, yeah, debt is definitely a big part of it. Avoiding debt and just realizing that debt is one of those things that it really can haunt anybody's life, no matter where you're at in the income spectrum. And so, yeah, if you had an awesome money takeaway from Squid Game, share it with us via email. We'd love to kind of hear what you thought, or yeah, maybe share it in the Facebook group as well. And so, Matt, let's get back to the beer we had on this episode. This was Alpha Abstraction Volume 18. 18, right? And
that's
so,
right.
Yeah, what were your thoughts on this beer?
And so it's Volume 18. And I mean, back in the day, we had Volume like 3 or 4. So this is kind of a series that we have followed for a while now. And so at the beginning of the episode, I said I was surprised that you picked this one up for us because this tends to be a sweeter double IPA. And normally that's not the direction that you like to go in with your IPAs, right?
Yeah, that's true. And I was like, well, it's been a while. Haven't had it since Volume 11. Give this a go, see what it's tasting like.
Was it Volume 10 that was the black can that we had on the show?
I don't even remember.
Maybe a year ago?
I don't know. I remember baseball stats like and beer cans typically pretty well, but I don't remember that. But I will say that this beer, honestly, it tastes really similar. It tastes exactly like what I remember from the last time I had it. And you're right, it is really sweet. It has almost like some fruity pebble notes along with just that like super, super sweet hop concentrate. And I mean, and I don't mean that in like a vicious way. Like it's not overly, it doesn't taste like cereal, but it does have like just those light fruity tones going on. And that's not a bad thing, but it's just not my jam. I wanted to give it another chance. This brewery's about an hour south of town. And a lot of people really like this beer. It's just not one of my favorites.
Yeah, and it's worth noting, too, that this is not a double dry-hopped IPA or a double hazy IPA. This is a double classic IPA, which means we poured a kind of golden amber color going on, and it was perfectly clear, nice and filtered for all the traditional beer drinkers out there who don't like stuff floating in their beer, which is often the times the case that when you and I drink a beer, I mean, regardless if it's a fruited sour or an adjunct stout or a hazy IPA, a lot of times there's stuff still with, you know, in the beer to give it all that flavor,
which I'm totally cool with,
which might gross some people out there, but for all of the super beer nerds, you know what we're talking about. This one didn't have that though, and so I feel like this was a nice introduction to maybe some of the bigger, more flavorful beers out there. I feel like it had like that sweet, like you said, like a sweet resin core to this beer. I enjoyed it. I'd give it like a 4.25 on Untappd, even though it's been a couple years maybe since I've been on Untappd and rated my beers. But Joel, that's going to be it for this episode. Listeners, you can find our show notes. Any references we made during this episode, you can find up on our website at howtomoney.com.
No doubt. And yeah, if you haven't watched Squid Game yet and it still sounds completely uninteresting to you, well, then keep avoiding it. But if you're like, oh, now I want to go back and see if I could see all the places where money nerdery intersects with dystopian Korean filmmaking, then check it out.
And we hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you did and you're not already a subscriber, make sure you mash that subscribe button so that you do not miss any future episodes from Joel and I. Buddy, that's going to be it for this episode. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.